You're listening to a podcast from 702.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702.
So, the final state capture report was released last week. How we have covered the previous volumes on the show is that I take time to go read the report and then come and break it down for you. Sometimes it takes time because the volumes are long, but it's worth it. And I would rather that than we rush through the recommendations and bring in it and the findings and bring you a discussion on that. Because like I've said before, I think there are important details that are littered throughout the report that we should equally pay attention to. And if you have capacity, my friend, I would urge you once again to take time to read the report yourself, the different volumes, because they're intriguing, right? They're infuriating, yes, but it's important that you understand the detail with which the state capture project was carried out. So today, we are looking at what the report says about the state security agency. And then tomorrow, we'll look at what it says about the ANC, President Cyril Ramaphosa, and parliamentary oversight. So let's start with the state security agency. The chairperson of the inquiry, Raymond Zondo, says in the report that evidence suggests that the commission may not in fact have been necessary if the state security agency had detected, fully investigated, countered state capture as a threat to our constitutional order when the symptoms of state capture first appeared. But the symptoms did appear, and there were spy bosses at the time that wanted to investigate, but then there were those in authority who just didn't want this investigation to take off. So let's start this conversation with Khadija Sharifa, who is who's the Africa editor at Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. And then at 10:30, I'll bring you some people who have seen firsthand the mess that happened at the State Security Agency. Khadija, thank you so much for making time for us. Good morning.
Thank you.
So let's start with just the concerns that were raised already in around 2011 around the influence of the Gupta family. Several witnesses, including former spy bosses like Mo Sheikh, made it very clear that in 2011 or so, they wanted to investigate the Guptas, but the situation was made difficult for them that they left the state security agency without even pursuing the investigation that they considered necessary. Just take us through what they discovered at the time and why we didn't have the investigation, given that there was some concern that this would actually be a threat to our national security.
Yeah, I think of all of the state capture reports, this is the most important because it speaks to the systemic design of how things were executed. So there's two things. The first is the predatory misuse, where the role of a publicly accountable intelligence system is removed into the corrupt private hands it was intended to hold accountable. And the second is the role of intelligence being weaponized to support specific factions maintaining control within the party that then control the government and de facto the country. So they appear to draw the lines as they went along rather than crossing lines. And as the report shows, it was executed through covert or classified structures that were held entirely unaccountable. There was the concentration of power in proxies like former spy boss Arthur Fraser, parallel vetting and operational systems that were unmonitored, and all of this required and used vast public resources. So as you mentioned, the report shows that back in 2011, Minister Swele shut down the investigation into the influence of the Gupta over government ministers and the president himself. And the report mentions that this might have not been, have been necessary if the people looking into the Dooley report had been allowed to continue doing their job. He currently faces criminal charges and is serving a sentence for kidnapping, which exposes his own character. But the report was rejected. And at the same time, the person who created the report also was the subject of a conspiracy against himself. So you see, the tactic is that everyone is in peril where they are about to be exposed or where they are seeking to cover the people who should be exposed. And the report notes that the peddling of false and unsubstantiated intelligence reports can destabilize the country, which we'll see in a few minutes with the unrest. The report also exposes a cognitive dissonance because it shows that classification under state security cannot be used to conceal criminality, but at the same time, covert operations using secrecy were used to undermine internal controls. The system was corroded and there was the concentration of power in a few people. The Minister of State Security, Ayanda Ndlovu, claimed that classified evidence was presented to the commission, which isn't true. The evidence was declassified. And he also targeted the witnesses who alleged that disclosing the confidential information allowed for the state to be comically suspended into a state of unreality. So we've seen that with Arthur Fraser releasing Zuma in the last few weeks of his contract, stating that it was done to prevent unrest, but justifying it on the basis of medical parole. So there's a lot of politicization.
Yeah,
back in 2009, Fraser was the one who got Zuma off on corruption charges. And so we just see a continuation of how politicization is used to justify things that have no basis in fact and which lead the country down a very dangerous path.
Yeah, and you know, I want us, Khadija, to also just look at some of the details of this report, because even with this investigation, people like Mo Sheikh wanted to investigate the Guptas, but people like Siyabonga Gcwele, who was the Minister of State Security Agency at the time, didn't want that investigation to continue. And it's important that we look at these minor details, so we look at even the key players, right, and the role that they played in blocking what really would have avoided the state capture project being what it is today. Let's quickly look at the Principal Agent Network project now, because this is what the state capture report goes into detail about. Just explain to our listeners what that project involved and what the role of Arthur Fraser was, because it looks like it was a free-for-all. In fact, the report says Arthur Fraser was a law unto himself, because there were large amounts of monies that were withdrawn, no accountability whatsoever.
So from 2012 until 2018, there was apparently over $1.5 billion that was siphoned in public funds. A lot of this was placed with people who ran counterintelligence projects, with Arthur Fraser in the PAN project. And of course, that relates to why there was an ongoing protection of Zuma. It's a mutual protection to both of them. And you see that the rogue unit of Project Beza, which was established to investigate the allegations of criminality, was also vilified in much the same way, or they called it a rogue unit, in much the same way that they targeted SARS when they were trying to conceal, continue, but also protect from exposure what was happening. So the report looks at the specificities of the people who were involved in the overall design of the system. And it kind of shows how these people are interlocked to the point where today Fraser is trying to create a proxy case against the President Ramaphosa for an incident that happened in February 2020 as a way of trying to discredit the President, trying to discredit the report, and to continue politicizing the concealment of what had taken place and what is now being exposed. So as they say, had these issues been allowed to be ventilated at the time that the State Security Agency was trying to investigate them, the situation would not have come about. But they were able to prevent that from happening through what the report isn't properly edited, but just because it isn't coherent in terms of the different sections. Some recommendations are very vague, other recommendations are very specific. But what we can see overall is that the mentality of party first as the basis for state capture, and then the justification of these types of systems, is the reason why the country is in the predicament it is. And also that the term state capture is derived from a much older phrasing from the World Bank in the 1970s, and it speaks to the transition process from colonialism to democracy and how foreign investors negotiated that. But the transformation process didn't happen with the freedom movements that ended up becoming our dominant political party. So the report in that case very critically also speaks to Ramaphosa's role, that he alleges he stayed within the system as an insider to try and change it from within. But in reality, Zondo finds that that justification suffered from substance, and he had put the party first.
Absolutely. Khadija Sharife, Africa editor, thank you so much for making time. She's the Africa editor at Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. After the break, I'm going to take you through the details of the state capture report. I want to explain to you what this PEN project involved. I want to take you through some of the rogue projects that the spy bosses were involved in. And I want to tell you about the involvement of David Mahlobo, who was then the Minister of State Security Agency. It's 22 minutes after 10 o'clock.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702.
It's 24 minutes after 10 o'clock. So we were talking about the PEN project with Sharifa earlier, and Arthur Fraser oversaw expenditure of around 600 million rand, according to the report. And that 600 million rand was spent on more than 300 cars. And these are cars that just stood idle. That money was spent on computers, on properties that were registered in names of private individuals, right? And what the PEN program was doing was gather information. And that information that was gathered by the PEN program was not even fed onto the state security agency systems at the head office, but it was fed to a private computer at Arthur Fraser's private home. And what the state capture inquiry argues is that that was in clear violation of the intelligence prescripts. There was an investigation into this PEN program, and there was a report that was handed over to the Hawks recommending possible criminal prosecution against Fraser. But then the report that was compiled by the then spy boss for domestic branch, Gibson Genge, that was handed over to the Hawks, that investigation was stopped because the former president, Jacob Zuma, and even the minister of state security at the time, Siyabonga Gcwele, thought that, oh no, you can't investigate Arthur Fraser because that would compromise national security. Hence, the state capture report now says the Hawks must restart that investigation. And when Fraser was not investigated, that paved the way for him to be appointed as the DG at the State Security Agency. And after his appointment, this report tells us that the budget for the office of the Director General increased from around 40 million rand to around 300 million rand. And more than 200 million rand was spent on COVID operations in circumstances where the DG should not be involved in the operations. These were rogue operations, right? And that's where you now start seeing the role of Thulani Dhlomo, who was at the time the head of special operations, because the report says he oversaw some of the most politically motivated and unlawful operations. And he also has been, the Hawks have been asked to investigate him. I want to tell you about the involvement of David Mahlobo. So we've spoken about Siyabonga Gcwele, who was the State Security Agency Minister at the time. And guess where Siyabonga Gcwele is? He has been rewarded. He's now, where is he now? I think he's an ambassador. Is it to China? This information you are hearing is exactly what Cyril Ramaphosa knows, is exactly what the ANC knows. But no, look at how he has been rewarded. David Mahlobo played a critical role at the State Security Agency at the time. The report indicates that he handled large sums of money. There was a point he allegedly received over 4 million rand in cash a month. 2.5 million rand of that was meant to be for Operation Commitment, and that was an operation around the former president Jacob Zuma. This is where Zuma would be receiving about 2.5 million rand a month. If you have read The President's Keepers by... Who's the author of The President's Keepers again? President's Keeper. I'm forgetting his name. I'll remember just now. If you have read that book, you would have known about the PEN program. And that's the first time, really, that I got to understand in detail when I read that book about the extent and how unlawful some of the activities were. And that's where you start learning even about this monthly payments to the former president, Jacob Zuma. I mean, why was he getting paid 2.5 million rand every single month? That's your, yeah? Jacques Poe, thank you so much to someone who just sent me that on WhatsApp. Jacques Poe is the name of the author. So David Mahlobo, there are some witnesses at the commission who said millions in cash were delivered to Mahlobo. And yes, he's denied this. But the state capture inquiry says there are other two witnesses who corroborated that there was a delivery of this 4.5 million rand in cash to David Mahlobo. Because at the time, he justified by saying that's for Operation Commitment. And that's money that was paid to Zuma in monthly payments. That's yours and my money, by the way. Right? Now, there are different projects that the State Security Agency undertook. There was Project Commitment, which I told you about, where there were payments made to the former president. There was Project Wave as well. Huh? This is where they were trying to penetrate and establish operating ground within identified, you know, continental, regional, and global territories. And this is when they wanted really to influence the media. And it's estimated that Project Wave, in fact, succeeded in infiltrating and influencing some sections of the media in South Africa. And there was a budget of 48 million rand. And the report finds that 20 million rand of that was ultimately gifted to Africa News Agency. There was Project Hollywood as well, where the State Security Agency was spying on politically connected people. There was Project Justice that David Mahlobo spoke about. There was Project Tin Roof, in which the president's wife was kidnapped practically and held against her will. Remember when Mantwili was accused of poisoning the former president Jacob Zuma? Now we know that it was David Mahlobo, according to this report, who took the investigation close to home. So he accused the president's wife of being the culprit. And what this Operation Tin Roof did was they went and procured a safe house for Mantwili, and that cost about 5.2 million rand. And there was a monthly withdrawal of 800,000 rand. Do you see? All of these projects are costing millions of rand. It was an opportunity, clearly, to loot. There were more than 40 individuals who were involved in this operation, which saw Mantwili and her two children being banished from Kandla. And let me remind you that the NPA actually declined to prosecute Mantwili because there was no evidence that could be found that she had tried to murder her husband, the former president Jacob Zuma. So those are some of the recommendations, not the recommendations, but those are some of the findings of the state capture report. David Mahlobo, whatever happened to him? Well, he is now the deputy minister. Whatever happened to Arthur Fraser, with all we know now, he was moved by President Cyril Ramaphosa to be the commissioner for correctional services. And President Cyril Ramaphosa knew very well how implicated Arthur Fraser was in that Penn report, and how even the high-level review panel at the time said there must be more investigations around it. But the president felt it's an incredible idea to make him the commissioner, just as he thought it's an incredible idea to make David Mahlobo the deputy minister, even though his credibility has been questioned, and even his role at the State Security Agency around how they mismanaged your funds. So remember that when the president and his allies want to come and argue that Arthur Fraser has a bone to pick with the president. Yeah, but you as a president, you appointed him even when you knew how problematic a character he is. It's just after 10:30. When we come back, we'll continue looking at this report closely. I'm also going to bring in the Inspector General of Intelligence, because my goodness, he tried to investigate Arthur Fraser, but Arthur Fraser was fighting back, was trying to limit the powers of the Inspector General, and was also trying to get him out of that office. So he'll tell us what he saw and what he was exposed to as he was at the State Security Agency. All of that coming up in this half hour.
702.
The Clement Maniatella Show.
Let's walk the talk.
It's 24 minutes before 11 o'clock. We are just breaking down some of the key takeouts from the final state capture report. And today we're just focusing on the State Security Agency. The State Capture Inquiry Chair saying that if the State Security Agency actually did its job, we wouldn't be where we are now. In fact, at some point, there were spy bosses in 2011 who were worried about the influence of the Gupta family. But no, Siyabonga Tshwele, who was the Minister of State Security at the time, and even Jacob Zuma, felt there's no need for that investigation, right? I want to bring in now Dr. Setlhumama Rudintwe, who is the former Inspector General for Intelligence Services. Dr. Dintwe, thank you so much for making time. Your term ended in March this year. I know they're still looking for the new Inspector General. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Mr. Maniatella, and I want to extend my greetings also to the broader listenership of 702.
So, when I read the report, and even when some of our listeners are listening to what was happening at the time, I mean, it's really shocking how much money was mismanaged. The millions of rands that were being withdrawn, and often the justification was, oh, these are for special projects. But clearly you could see that the monies were more than just for those specific special projects. What is it that you saw as the Inspector General for Intelligence, and what did you do about it?
It is shocking, in fact, what we experienced. But what I'll be sharing with the South Africans is that these issues have been ventilated in the other fora. For instance, the Mufumadi report on the State Security Agency, you know, elucidated on those issues. Secondly, the appearance of Dr. Mufumadi before the Zondo Commission, the appearance of Mr. Jafta, the then acting Director General of the State Security Agency, and my own testimony before the Zondo Commission.
Yes.
All points to millions, if not billions, of rand that have been, you know, taken out of the State Security Agency without any accountability whatsoever. And the registration of what we can call fictitious operations, but the monies were taken for certain purposes, and above all, or in majority, it was used to fuel the factionalism within the governing party, the ANC or the African National Congress.
Mm.
And that is no secret. It comes out in many reports. It has been repeating itself over and over again. So it's a lot of money that has been taken. If you had a glance on it, and you're an individual such as myself, obviously, you could get either overwhelmed or you could lose hope altogether, because the country was going away at a particular point.
Yeah, I mean, this is the State Security Agency, Dr. Dintwe, and if and even the State Capture Inquiry chairperson talks about how even this idea of secrecy as the guiding light, so to speak, excuse the pun, around this agency, that needs to be looked at, because people have used that as an opportunity to loot taxpayers' money. You've mentioned the money being used even for ANC conferences, and this report gives us examples of money that was used to accommodate and feed MK veterans during the ANC January 8 celebration in Rustenburg in 2016. There's one witness who said that there was financial assistance to the ANC at the Nazareth conference as well in 2017. I want you to tell me, when you heard about the PEN program and you knew about a report that was complied against Arthur Fraser at some point, and you tried to investigate him, what happened?
What happened was that there was a serious fight back, in fact, and that was akin to a novel written by Chinua Achebe, Things Fall Apart. And it was also akin to A Village Coming to an End, because there was a constant attack, you know, on myself, whether it was on my integrity, whether it was on my security clearance, which I had obtained in less than 6 months previously, you know. And I had made it clear. I had approached Mr. Fraser. I sat with him in a meeting, and I told him that I received a complaint. So it was not a concocted complaint, but it was an investigation that was sent to me by the Democratic Alliance that I should actually look at what happened to the earlier investigation into the PEN program.
Mm.
But, you know, I was, you know, attacked to an extent that my security got compromised. My security clearance was withdrawn.
Mm.
I was barred from entering my own office of an oversight body, of a constitutional body, by those people. And there were a lot of cameramen who were coming from the then ANN7 who were sitting at the gate, because they saw that I was going to come to the office and cause commotion and all those other things. So that's exactly what happened. I got attacked. to an extent that I even approached the courts, the Gauteng North High Court, so that I could be assisted.
Yeah, let's hope that investigation is going to kick off, because the Raymond Zondo, the Chief Justice, is recommending in this report that there must be a fresh investigation into Fraser arising from the previous report by Gibson Njenje that was submitted to the Hawks, but for some reason that investigation didn't take off because you can't investigate Arthur Fraser because that will compromise national security. You, what do you think about the oversight of Parliament? Because when you read the report, you see of how it failed in its oversight responsibility. Even at some point, the commission was shocked that it's taken so long to fill key positions, like even the Inspector General of Intelligence position, which is quite critical, but it was just taking forever for Parliament to fill that position. Do you think they played an effective oversight role? And what is it that they could have done that could have helped prevent what now is really, it's just a crisis?
Dr. Mufuma said it in his report. I think the Zondo Commission, I'm still reading bits and pieces of that, but I think that he's making that finding also on the role of the oversight committee, particularly in this case, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. Mm. I am saying it today with conviction that the committee, especially the previous one, failed to do its duty, failed to carry out its mandate, failed to protect our institution, the Office of the Inspector General of Intelligence, which was supposed to be the foot soldier. Now, foot soldier, maybe I should make this example. You get the Auditor General of South Africa, who does work on the ground and report to SCOPA or the other committee in Parliament. And if you do not have support of that particular committee, then you are actually defeated, because I make recommendations, and those recommendations can either be implemented by the committee itself or can be implemented by the minister responsible for a particular service. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe we've got a skewed picture here, Clement. Let me clarify that our oversight mandate was actually based on three different intelligence service agencies. The first one being the State Security Agency, the second one being the Crime Intelligence Division of the South African Police Services, the third one being the Defense Intelligence of the South African National Defense Force. Mm. So you can just connect the dots and realize that the problem was even broader than the State Security Agency itself, because the Crime Intelligence Division of the SAPS was also involved in politics. It was involved in political collection. It was involved in attending the conferences of the governing party. So you can see how broad this problem was. And the only people who had the biggest power to deal with accountability within these three agencies was the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. And it didn't do that. Eh?
Yeah.
Believe you me. Mm. And I'm saying it with an open mouth.
It's really sad. It really is sad.
Actually, even assisting the attackers of the oversight bodies to attack us.
Mm.
In certain instances,
yeah.
We are called, we were threatened with suspensions and so forth by the same Parliament of South Africa. And that is very much sad.
Yeah.
Evidence was met in that particular regard. And I think that when one actually gets deeper into the state, into the last portion of, or the last installment of this report, you will realize that there are findings in that regard.
There are serious findings against Parliament and that committee. I want to ask you as we wrap up about the fake intelligence reports, because this is something you've looked into. There was a time when you spoke about the influence of the Crime Intelligence Division in the SAPS, and this state capture report talks about even people like Mdluli, who was, I think, the head of crime intelligence at the time, how they produced these reports to the former, to the then President Jacob Zuma, about there being a plot to unseat him as president. And he believed those reports, even though there were two senior state security agency officials at the time who said that's not necessarily the case. And lately, I think just before 2017, President Jacob Zuma used another intelligence report to fire Mcebisi Jonas and Pravin Gordhan, because he said this report indicates that they were somewhere overseas having discussions with people who were trying to topple this government. You looked into this issue. Did you ever look at that intelligence report that the president relied on? And was it fake? Was it legitimate? And did the president ever even comply with your investigations?
It was illegitimate. In fact, all the reports, there were findings later, which concluded that those reports were illegitimate, and that they were done for political expediency, carrying the favors for those people who were managing the intelligence agencies at those times. This is a third one, which led to a demise of a lot of people who could have prevented the state capture. That one was about the rendition of the Zimbabweans, if you remember that report. And it implicated people such as the then head of the Hawks. It implicated General Sibiya and some other guys. You know, it was a report which purported or which claimed that those people had met somewhere in the East End and they also wanted to overthrow the government. So this has been a pattern. It's a lot of reports. I talked about them. I talked about them before the Zondo Commission, just to indicate and to show that pattern of the reports that will be political in nature and which will be used to then embalm those who were opposed to state capture. So it has always been happening. The intelligence services were involved to go and investigate further the then head of the NP, the then national, the head of the NPA then, Mutolisi
Masana. Yes,
they were also involved in that. Mm. And at a later stage, in each and every case, it was proven that the information or the report, as it was concluded, was actually not truthful, that it was unlawful because it may not have been registered properly, and that it had no other purpose other than to deal to muddy the political waters of South Africa.
Mm. Oh. Dr. Dintre, thank you so much for making time. Do you have hope? I know you are the former Inspector General of Intelligence, but do you have hope that the State Security Agency can be cleaned up to a point where it does what it's supposed to do? Or are we always running a risk of it being heavily politicized?
There is nothing that cannot be solved, Mr. Mangatela. There is nothing. Whether it's a very complex, issue, it only requires a will to deal with it. And the moment you get that particular will, whether political or otherwise, you should be able to solve this particular problem. I didn't lose hope at all. Every time we are knocked down as the people who were overseeing this agency, or these agencies, intelligence agencies, we stood up and tilted ourselves off the dust of our bodies, and we resolved to continue and deal with this. I did not lose hope. I hope that there will be somebody, my successor, who will be able to also keep an open eye as far as these issues are concerned.
We hope so too. We need a state security agency that functions. People responsible for our national security. And if they are not doing that, then they are busy being involved in the factional battles of the ANC and busy wasting our taxpayers' money on rogue operations, then my goodness, we are exposed. Thank you for making time, Dr. Sitluma Marudindu, the former Inspector General for Intelligence Services. It's 7 minutes, in fact, before 11.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702. Let's walk the talk.
I want to bring in Advocate Mahlodi Moefena, who is the former State Security Agency Head for Domestic Intelligence, current Ambassador to South Sudan. Advocate, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement, and good morning to South Africans at home.
So, you came into the State Security Agency, and most of your responsibility, together with your colleagues at the time, was to clean up the mess. You knew what the high-level review panel said, and part of your job, I imagine, was to just implement some of what they recommended. How messy was the State Security Agency, and how far did you go in trying to clean it up and position it as an institution that does what it's supposed to do?
Well, I take it that if we were all at one in the agency, especially as the head of the agency, I think we would have achieved much more than I did, because when I got there, the first thing I did was to get rid of Tulani Dlomo. So that's a tick. Tulani Dlomo, who was there without going to work, and no one wanted to fire him, including the former SDG there, did nothing because they were scared of him. But that was my first task, so I got rid of him. Where whistleblowers, because all you need to do is to give confidence to and support to the subordinate that if you whistleblow, nobody will tell you. And that's what I did. And people started coming. And as you know, Clement, when I left there, I opened up 7 serious corruption or fraud cases against my officials, some of past officials, senior men, of course, and opened the cases. And one is presently doing 6 years in jail. So implementation of the state capture report, in my view, basically implies that people who are counting officers must actually do what is correct. If you see that here there was fraud, go to the police and open up the case. Let them investigate that.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did. And remember, Clement, the commission is inquisitorial. Prosecution is accusatorial. The test of proving any criminal case is much, much higher than the test at the commission. So, and I can tell you, all the cases that I opened, if they've taken all the way, all those people that I opened criminal cases against will be found guilty and charged. Yeah. And sentenced to
How much that's money was mismanaged, Advocate Moefe, from what you have seen when you were the head for domestic intelligence? How easy was it to just access cash when you work for the State Security Agency in the name of these special projects?
I must be honest, I mean, when I got there, those special projects, because I basically put a halt on them and put governance into it so much that even if they were doing those things before, in my time, no sense slipped through the cracks anyway. That much I can tell you. Because people, in fact, most of officials at the State Security Agency, Clement, are people who mean well, who want to do well. The problem is at the leadership level, where perhaps people just don't want to do things correctly. And I am happy that the current DG is hell-bent on ensuring that the state security agency gets cleaned up. There is a forensic firm at the state security agency. The process of even separating the SSA into 2 agencies in line with the recommendation of the Sidimo Famadi report, which the president initiated on his own accord, had started when I got to the State Security Agency. Unfortunately, when there was change of political age, the process got detoured. Mm. It's not as if there was no beginning of the de-establishment of the State Security Agency. Mm. Insofar as I'm concerned, work has been done and is still being done, and I'm sure that the current DG is focused on ensuring that the State Security Agency gets cleaned up.
Ah, let's hope so. Advocate Mahlodi Moefe, thank you for making time. He's the former State Security Agency head for domestic intelligence. He's the current ambassador to South Sudan.